Is it really interesting to see how these companies are approaching Chicago, right?
She was telling me she's really trying to understand how the tech ecosystem here works.
What's interesting about the baby boomers is that they've never met a debt they didn't like.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Now, welcome to Monday afternoon, everyone. Steve Bertrand here in the Skyline Studio high above the Chicago River. I hope you had a great weekend and are set for a productive work week. In the studio, Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis from Chicago Inno will kick some stories around with him. A little bit later, Philip Weiss will be here. Of course, he's the president at Work Right Solutions. He had an interesting some statistics come out. You know, we think of Donald Trump as being very pro-business. They've eased a lot of restrictions. But if you look at the fines that have been imposed this year by various government agencies, they're actually setting records. So we're going to try to figure out why that might be. Also, I want to talk to him about the CEO of McDonald's being forced out of a job for having a consensual affair. We're learning about Steve Easterbrook's his compensation package today. Can't work for Burger King for 2 years. So I guess he'll have to look elsewhere. Dahlke and Davis here. Welcome to both of you.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, Steve.
Okay, so as long as we're talking about food and maybe not quite fast food, Catherine, you wrote this story about this company. Is it called Rise? Is it just Rise?
Rise Gardens.
Rise Garden. And it's a way that we can grow our vegetables in our living room.
That's right.
Is that something you want to do?
Well, it sounds interesting.
It actually does sound pretty interesting.
Sounds kind of fun. But yeah, Rise Gardens is a new Chicago startup founded by Hank Adams. He's an 1871 board member, the former CEO of Sports Vision. And this is kind of his second act. And what he's doing is building hydroponic indoor gardening systems.
Okay, go back to Sports Vision, Joe, because we all know what this guy accomplished, right? What his creation was. It was the fourth down, that little yellow line that goes across the football field.
That's right. So the first down yellow line marker on your TV, that was basically invented by this company called Sports Vision, which is a Chicago-based company. So they do a lot of on-screen graphics and data around sports.
Okay, and so he's done with that, or he's moved on with that, and now he's gardening.
That's right, yeah. And so he, was kind of trying his hand at making his own hydroponic system. He described it as being the first iteration being kind of ugly.
Pretty ugly, yeah.
This isn't something I want in my living room. Like, this should really be hidden in the basement. But that's kind of how we got the idea to create a hydroponic system that is attractive enough to be in your living room or in your kitchen and, you know, something that's kind of an accent piece of furniture.
Well, it's pretty big, right? It's not a small thing. You've seen it.
Right, it's pretty big, maybe like about the size of a bookshelf.
Okay.
In
so
width.
It can grow a substantial amount of vegetables.
That's right. So they are selling seed pods that are made for the device, and you can get anything from like arugula to lettuce, tomatoes, strawberries, even.
I have a garden. It's not easy to grow a head of lettuce. You know, I think that's kind of impressive. He said you can grow arugula in 14 days.
That's right. And lettuce in about 25 days. You know, the whole idea with this is to really kind of make it a foolproof gardening machine, right? He's like, you know, there's an accompanying iPhone app. If you follow the directions, change the water regularly and put the nutrients in, like you'll be able to grow the perfect head of lettuce.
It's connected to the Internet of Things.
That's right. So a lot of this is kind of smartphone connected. So kind of knowing smartly when different water is needed, when different nutrients is needed. And so it's kind of keeping you really up to speed, you know, by the minute of kind of what your plants need in terms of the correct ways to grow. But I mean, it almost $1,000 for this sort of three-tiered system.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, this is for not just your casual gardener, right? This is somebody who's really serious about kind of farm to table stuff, growing their own tomatoes and lettuce in-house. I mean, urban farming is a trend that's been happening for a while, right? And Chicago is maybe not exactly the perfect climate if you were wanting to go all in on gardening. And so this is a way to kind of bring that inside your home and to create a kind of fashionable, quote-unquote, apparatus is a pretty interesting thing for a lot of urban farmers.
So it could come up to three shelves, right, Catherine?
That's right.
If you just want one shelf, it's, what, $550?
That's right, yep.
Okay, and if you want all three, it's almost $1,000.
It's almost $1,000, $950.
Right, so, you know, you could buy the produce section at Whole Foods for that.
Yes, you could. So, you know, this is a more expensive device, and the way the founder was explaining it to me is that just a lot of the the components of it are expensive.
Right.
It's expensive to assemble it. And, you know, you might be familiar with those hydroponic systems, the countertop ones, the small ones, maybe you're only growing.
I don't grow anything at home, you know.
Well, those have become pretty popular. But, you know, the idea with Rise Gardens is that it's really a way to grow a significant amount of food, not just like a piece of basil you put on your pasta, but really something you could create a whole salad with.
So who are his customers and how many does he have?
So far he sold about 70 systems. I mean, you know, the ideal customer, right, is affluent, somebody that really cares about organic produce, and kind of sick of going to Whole Foods, I guess.
Interesting guy, though, because you can buy it online, but he's also got a pop-up store, right?
I mean, this is the kind of product I think that's helpful to interact with. You know, it's tough to buy a $1,000 hydroponic system online without, you know, seeing it and being able to kind of view how the stuff is made inside. And so I think that having a kind of physical presence is important for a product like this.
Okay, so as long as we're talking about upscale things that you eat or drink, let's talk about this drink Haywell, which, Catherine, you wrote about them as well. A couple of Miller Coors executives, they quit and came up with a mood-altering drink. I thought that's what MillerCoors did.
So Britt Dowtry and Ashley Selman, they left MillerCoors in 2018 to launch Haywell. And basically, you could think of this as like a healthy LaCroix. So it's a enhanced sparkling beverage, and they say that they have vitamins, adaptogens, berries, and organic caffeine to kind of create like a wellness drink.
So they've got four different sort of moods.
Three moods.
What are the moods?
So we got energy and immunity, energy and focus, and calm and restore.
Okay, and you've tried it.
I've tried it. I had the Calm and Restore, so that one has no caffeine.
You're pretty calm anyway, so
yeah,
did it calm
usually
you?
Pretty level-headed.
Well, you can't say that about yourself.
I can vouch
she's pretty level-headed.
Thank you,
Jim. Okay, good, yeah.
So I don't know if the mood altering was super effective on her, but I mean, look, we've seen sparkling water just absolutely
blow up, right?
And so this is interesting, too, because you know this brand is made by two folks who had 9-10-plus years at MillerCoors. So these are marketing execs who've kind of been in the industry for a while and now see an opportunity to kind of dive into this kind of really hot sparkling water trend.
Again, though, they're very expensive, right? It's like, is it $4 a can?
$4 a can retail. You can also buy them online. Six pack is about $25.
Right. So I guess if you're at a restaurant, it's not too crazy to spend $4 on a beverage, but if you're pulling a can out of your refrigerator, that's a pretty big chunk of change.
Totally. And, you know, you're going to be competing with a lot of new entrants into this industry, right? I mean, it's a business that a lot of people are interested in. And I think you're seeing it not just kind of from the startup side, but you're seeing it from the large CPG side as well. I think everybody wants to figure out a way to get kind of market share in the sparkling water industry. And so if they can kind of gain a little bit of an edge by having this sort of like calm and restore element or energy element, right. I mean, I think that's a pretty interesting piece of that market.
I mean, it came up with Molson Coors just last week, when they talked about relocating here and shedding a bunch of jobs, how they were being hurt by, I mean, several different fronts, but one of them is the popularity of spiked water, basically, right?
Like White Claw and stuff?
White Claw, yeah, exactly. Okay, so I see Foxtrot is selling this, my favorite store. Where else can you buy it?
You can get it at Goddess and the Grocer, and then they also said like local yoga studios.
Okay, and how are they doing so far? Is up and running?
So it's up and running. They just hit the shelves last month, so I think still kind of getting those first sales out. But say that they are getting good feedback on the product.
And so we could have a really upscale dinner party at home, right? You could have the hydroponic spinach and follow it up with some restorative beverages.
The thing I like about this, though, is that it, you know, the founders are, they have a deep, deep background in the beverage industry. So it's not just like a couple of college kids like figuring out how to get into this trend. It's these, you know, founders have the data that backs this up.
So you think they're going to make it?
I think that they have as good a chance as any kind of upstart beverage company.
Okay, and it's called again Haywell.
Haywell.
Why is it called Haywell?
They said they wanted to give it a name that was an invitation to wellness.
Okay, so, Haywell.
Hey, wellness.
That's Catherine Davis, Jim Dahlke here from Chicago Inn. Rise for the Rest is the story about them is that they've raised another $150 million that they're going to give out to different companies or upstart companies. But I like the way, explain for me how they got their start in about this whole bus tour thing.
Right. So Rise of the Rest is a VC fund within a larger VC group called Revolution Ventures. And Revolution is co-founded by Steve Case, the former AOL co-founder. And really, you know, the ethos of Revolution and Rise of the Rest is to really back startups that are not in Silicon Valley, that are not in New York, really kind of find really high growth companies across the heartland. And so back in 2017 is when the first Rise of the Rest VC fund started, and it kind of was born from this bus tour that different folks were taking within Revolution Ventures and sort of meeting founders and going into these startup communities and learning about the tech ecosystems across the country.
J.D. Vance was one of them, right? The guy behind Hillbilly Elegy.
That's right. So he's part of that that group as well, and so he's a partner with them, and yeah, really kind of like helping spearhead this effort to find and build up entrepreneurs across the country. The vast, vast majority, I think it's almost like 75%, the VC dollars are going to either the Bay Area or New York City, and just fairly little amounts are going throughout the rest of the country. And so now they've come out with now their second $150 million fund, and some of the investors in that fund are well-known folks like Jeff Bezos, right, and lots of high-profile folks.
What kind of businesses are they helping, Catherine?
Well, so generally early stage businesses, you know, so ones that, of course, in a variety of industries, so B2C, B2B, food tech, whatever it may be. But what's kind of interesting about this news is seeing the Chicago-based investors that are backing the fund. So you've got the Groupon co-founders, Brad Keywell and Eric Lefkowski, the Morningstar founder, Joe Mansueto. So, you know, seeing kind of that local money behind a initiative like this is, you know, interesting.
Funny, I'm talking about Foxtrot being one of my favorite stores, you know, joking around. They come in from time to time, Michael does. But Foxtrot, too, right? They got money from this group.
Yeah, so Catherine was talking about the folks who are investing in the fund, several Chicago companies have been the recipients of the first fund. So Foxtrot being one of them, Codeverse, which is kind of a coding school for kids, The Mint, which is in the hotel industry, Peanut Butter, and Party Slate. So those are the five companies that have been backed in the first fund. And so the first fund was $150 million as well, and then the remainder of that fund will be used for follow-on investments for those kind of first 130 or so startups that they were able to invest in. And then the next fund will be able to invest in a whole new crop of businesses.
What is Peanut Butter? I don't remember that. I know most of the other ones.
So they are basically making like a college loan repayment system, but offering as a employee benefit.
Okay, and so they go to employers to try to entice them to use
that. Exactly. They're like, use this software.
Okay, so the money's coming in. So when will we find out who gets the latest round?
So soon. So they announced the fund. That means there are going to be investments made pretty soon here. So I would expect to see kind of new Rise of the Rest fund and investments here pretty soon.
Catherine, you follow a lot the VC investment in Chicago, tech investment in Chicago. And there was a study out not too long ago that shows the city's doing pretty well when it comes to luring people from the Bay Area to Chicago, fair or not?
That's right, yeah. So CBRE, they put out their annual Tech 30 report last week, and the big takeaway was that the Midwest, and Chicago in particular, have become a top destination for San Francisco Bay Area tech companies that want to expand outside of that area. You know, they're really kind of looking at Chicago, and it's oftentimes one of the first choices.
Why, and why is that?
Well, one thing that, you know, you hear kind of a lot around Chicago is that this is an affordable city and state.
So we're kind of cheap. Well, that's interesting, though, that we're affordable a state, because everyone else who lives here talks about how expensive we are. They do.
Well, they're affordable on the talent side. So, you know, okay, the salaries aren't quite what you'd have to pay in the West Coast and New York City. You know, the other part about that, too, is that, you know, obviously Chicago being centrally located is important, but really the talent is here. And I think that we're starting to hear that over and over and over again. And we've told you countless stories about new office openings in
Sometimes
Chicago.
Sometimes that's just something people say, though, but it's more than that.
But I think that the proof is in the pudding, right? So these are engineering jobs that are coming to Chicago. These are not just sales jobs. 10, 15, 20 years ago, when a tech company would come into town, this is a regional sales outpost.
Right.
There are hard tech jobs here in Chicago. Google has a second office coming here in Chicago. They have hardware jobs here in the city. That was really kind of almost unthinkable 15 or so years ago, right? So the fact that these companies are hiring high tech roles, high skilled roles, does show you that, hey, the talent is here, and Silicon Valley companies are noticing that.
Catherine, 20% of all square footage leased in the first half of this year went to a tech business?
That's right. And that's up from 11% in 2011 when they first started tracking this data. So it really is, you know, a reflection of how much the tech industry in Chicago has grown, whether it be from, you know, coastal tech companies expanding here or the homegrown startups we have.
Is it also that so many, I mean, does the definition of tech expanding, I'm wondering, I'd want to throw cold water on these numbers, but can a lot more companies that might not have been called tech 10 years ago be called tech now?
I think there's maybe some of that, but I mean, you look at the companies that have done it, right? Like Uber's big office expansion at the post office, Google kind of doubling down on space, even Facebook is growing around here, and you're seeing even kind of smaller companies like Stripe and Affirm and a lot of these other sort of Silicon Valley companies realize that there's an opportunity to kind of have space in Chicago. I mean, in just last year alone, Chicago office space occupied by tech companies grew by over 4 million square feet.
It's a pretty nice growth.
Yeah.
Okay. I can't let you guys go without talking a little bit about Outcome Health. We discussed it on Friday, but you know, Outcome Health was this rising, meteorically rising star in Chicago, now fined $70 million by the federal government. And is it over for them now?
Sort of. There is still an ongoing federal investigation, but this is the Department of Justice
investigation.
There's still ongoing stuff. But so this one was settled. So basically, you know, Outcome agreed to pay $70 million, the majority of which has kind of already been paid to clients who were not really given the advertising that Outcome said they would. So basically, Outcome Health as an advertising business that operates within doctors' waiting rooms and exam rooms.
We had Shraddha Agarwal come in here. She's the president of the company after they raised $500 million.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about that. And now it come to find out that $500 million was based on cooked numbers.
Totally. So basically, yeah, they were not delivering on the ad metrics that they said they were. They were cooking the books, essentially. And part of the settlement with the DOJ was that they were admitting to their wrongdoing.
But the company survives.
The company has survived. So they've recapitalized. I mean, they're a much smaller business than they were. Actually, they don't even really call themselves a tech business anymore, really. So it's interesting
there
to kind of see
the square footage.
But they haven't shut down. So they've pivoted a little bit and they've kind of refocused. And we'll have to see long term the viability of the business. But they're still around.
Jim Dahlke, Catherine Davis. Read more at ChicagoInno.com. Don't forget the Inno Minute every morning as well on the opening bell. You guys, thanks for coming by. We'll look forward to seeing you next week.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks very much, Don Klepp and Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. It's at 1237 here in Chicago. Philip Weiss is in the studio, the president of WorkRight Solutions, comes by from time to time. Philip, great to see you again.
Thanks for having me.
And your job is to advise businesses so they stay out of legal trouble.
Yes, right? And hopefully grow successfully. So we look for the good things as well as avoiding the bad things.
You're not just a scold, you're an encourager.
Yes, though the scolding part is entertaining too.
So I was surprised, I don't know that I was surprised, but what a big story this is that the CEO of McDonald's is out for a consensual affair.
I can't discuss that specific situation.
I'm sorry, you're right. So, but I mean, yes, just the idea that a CEO of a major company could be tossed out.
What is interesting about the trend that we're seeing, mm-hmm, is that large companies are really both proactive in terms of setting rules internally, but also they're quick to step up and act if, in fact, anybody at a key level, key management level, has a personal relationship. What we find really fascinating, Steve, is when you have situations with whether it's a CFO, whether it's a division head, somebody at higher levels of authority, engaging in personal relationships,
right,
whether it is considered consensual or not, it sends a really interesting signal to other people in management, which is to say, you know what? You don't need to have such a clear line. You don't need to always maintain that sort of pure professional standard.
Right, right.
And that's where these companies get concerned. So it's not always about the given situation, whether or not they have a code of conduct that talks about it. It's also about the message it sends throughout the ranks. They want to keep those lines really clear.
People who work together fall in love with each other, right?
They do.
And
some of them married.
And some of them marry, yeah.
Right. And the reality is, it should be known that we are running a risk. If you and I are running our own companies,
right,
and I know this would not happen in our current situations, but if we were to fall in love with somebody who worked for us or think we're falling in love, the moment that we begin to take a step across that line, we're running an enormous risk. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is it's really hard to ever prove that a relationship, when you have a difference of authority,
is consensual.
Is consensual.
Right.
So even for those two individuals, there's a legal...
So someone should quit.
I'm sorry?
Someone should quit.
Well, the reality is this. If you keep the lines clear, if you maintain absolute professionalism, you don't raise that specter at all. And that's clearly going to be the safest message. I sound like a lawyer talking here.
Right, right.
But we have seen again and again where the situation didn't seem to be a risk at first, and then it just kept snowballing. The other piece is relationships change. Somebody who is seemingly highly loyal, very interested in the romance, totally a go-getter, highly motivated employee, they change. We change. And it's when individuals, personalities, and relationships change that maybe someone claims it was no longer consensual.
You know, there are policies, I think you tell me about, and even if you're a peer, that you're not supposed to be engaged in romantic relationships, right? Is that common or uncommon?
So that's a really interesting question, Steve, because it's now we sort of shift into different territory. When you make this point, like people fall in love at work.
Right.
That's true. And most companies have acknowledged the reality that that's going to happen. When people are at the same level, it becomes incredibly difficult to create some rules and enforce them consistently that no one can date anybody under our corporate roof.
It's hard to begin that policy.
To make that policy.
But it's the same thing. These two people, one of them may one day be promoted in overseeing the man or, yes. or the woman or whatever.
Yeah, that's also an interesting dynamic because when that happens, smart companies take a look at the situation and say, all right, you've been in a relationship. We respect that.
Mm-hmm.
You were at the same level. Now that one of you is being promoted because they deserve the opportunity, we've got to look at where do you both work? Does one have direct authority over the other? We don't want to in any way change the opportunities that either may have available to them,
right.
but we want to create some separation. So there's a huge difference in effect between dating somebody who's a peer and then having one person promoted, having the company engaged in figuring out what that means, where they're placed, what work they do, and actively dating somebody who is your subordinate.
I remember a story where there was a company policy that two employees could not be married. Is that still legal?
It is. Well, it's not really a matter of legality in most cases. Those policies are far, far and few between.
Okay.
Again, because especially at big companies, it's going to happen. And the reality is there's not that much difference between people dating and people being married,
right.
except maybe how they feel about each other. And the reality is, in terms of the legal risk, Steve, if you date somebody who's a subordinate, you're at risk that they might sort of claim it wasn't quite as an equal footing relationship as
right.
you thought it was. If they marry you at some point, of course, that risk does drop, but other risks can grow.
So a CEO who is ousted for having a consensual affair with someone who works for her or him loses his or her job. Does the other half of the relationship lose his or her job? The lower worker?
Rarely. It's not unheard of. The issue with just telling them both, you're out of here, we want to sort of clean ourselves
right.
of every part of this former relationship, is courts can look at moving the subordinate out as retaliatory.
I was going to say, right, so then the person who was in the lower said, could say I'm being punished for this.
Right, now I'm being punished twice because I kind of felt compelled to be in the relationship now that I think about it, and then suddenly I lost my job because I did what I was compelled to do.
So
there's a lot of layers we want to be aware of when it comes to difference of authority.
So what you're saying is if you want to protect your job, you should sleep with your boss.
I wouldn't say that because the risks are enormous. And the benefits can be limited.
Hey, one of the things we're going to talk about, and we're kind of out of time, but it was about the level of fines that are being imposed by the Trump administration. We tend to think of them as hands-off, easing regulations, but they're issuing record-breaking fines.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Sort of it's counterintuitive. And there's a parallel here, right? You think you should be able to fall in love at work, and some people think the current administration is employer-friendly to the point that companies are getting a pass, whereas they didn't in the past.
Is that what's happening? They think the rules just aren't going to be enforced,
it's
so they break them?
It's almost a laissez-faire attitude among certain managers to say, let me wait till the next election. And that's really a misguided way of thinking. couple agencies, Department of Labor is one of them, have been as active, in fact, more active than ever in terms of the kind of fines they're imposing and amounts they're recovering from companies. And Steve, these are companies of all sizes. So from 12 employees to 120,000 employees, they're paying large fines for underpaying their employees.
So a little company's not going to escape scrutiny.
That's the reality. You want to think about your practices. You want to pay fairly. You want to pay overtime.
Philip Weiss is the president of WorkRight Solutions. Thanks for coming by.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Every industry is finding themselves shifting in bigger little ways to a green side of business. Cars are seeing electric options grow, consumer products like food wrappings are pulling back in the plastic, and now the funeral industry is looking to get its clients closer to Mother Earth. The Chicago Tribune shared the example of the Davenport Family Funeral Homes that is taking advantage of the green trend for clients' last wishes and providing biodegradable caskets. Yep, even you can lessen your environmental impact on the Earth after you're gone from the Earth. Hey, every industry has their own trends, no matter how strange it seems at first. And that's pretty on brand, because CBRE data showed that Chicago is the greenest place to work in the country. The data is based on the percentage of certified green space in commercial buildings, and 71% of our buildings are green certified. If you work in a high-rise downtown, you might notice the green patches or rooftop gardens on top of the buildings, and that goes a long way with helping Chicago keep its title. Yeah, we're environmentally friendly. What's up? I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Amy Guth is in the studio.
Hello.
The host of the Daily Gist podcast from Crane Chicago Business. Nice weekend.
Yeah, okay. But hitting the ground running today. Lots of big news starting late yesterday with McDonald's CEO Steve Easterbrook's exit.
We were talking about that earlier today. I spend parts of my Sundays, almost every Sunday, in my local Mariano's store. And we talked a while ago about how Mariano's is sort of losing its luster.
Yeah.
And now it might be getting worse.
Well, it remains to be seen, but a leaked Kroger memo, it shows that they're, you know, kind of freaking out.
Kroger owns Mariano's.
That's right.
Right.
They're kind of freaking out about their brand, kind of saying like, look, we're really struggling to maintain our ground in this space where we, against like the Walmarts and the Amazons and all this. Customers are confused by our brand. We got to do something radically different right now.
I think I read in the story that they're number 17 in the Forbes list or something, but no one recognizes, no one knows what they do.
Oh yeah. In the memo, the line is, we're a Fortune 17 company that doesn't break the top 100 in brand value ranking.
Yeah, which is a big deal.
That's a big deal. Yeah. So they're looking to make some pretty big changes pretty quickly, pretty immediately. Remains to be seen exactly what they are. They didn't want to elaborate on that too much, other than just saying we need to drive repeat trips and solidify our leadership position in the industry.
So I was making a very nice ham and chorizo stew yesterday. And I'm looking all over for the chorizo and you know, not the ground type, the sausage type, right, that you would slice up. And the deli counter sent me to the meat counter. The meat counter sent me somewhere else. I finally found the guy's like, yeah, we don't carry it anymore.
See, I ran into that in the last week, too, when my Mariano's. There's only specific things I go to that Mariano's for.
Right.
And they're like, oh, yeah, we don't carry that anymore. Sorry. I was like, okay, what about this? Yeah, we don't have that anymore either.
That's interesting, because so clearly they're cutting back in that way, too.
Yeah, it's
so what's going to happen?
Well, we got to wait and see. I think later this week we'll know a little more solidly what's going to happen and how that might impact the 44 Mariano's stores here in our market. But certainly there is struggle and pressure and heat happening with the Kroger home office.
Okay, tell me what's going on with Allstate, because their agents are up in arms.
Oh boy, 11,000 of them. They have nearly
22,000 arms.
That's 22,000 arms, right? So they are quite angry because Allstate has announced that they're cutting costs and they're going to be trimming by 10% of what most of the agents get when customers renew their policies.
Wow.
Now, the reason that's so significant is that renewal commission is 85 to 95% of most agents'
overall
revenue.
Right, you get the customer
revenue.
And that just is automatic money.
Right. And so Allstate's position on it is like, hey, look, agents have to hunt a little bit harder for new business. That's what we want. We want new business. Meanwhile, the agents are saying, hey, the whole thing is our whole brand is built around we build relationships with people over time and we have them and it's like family. So it's really a big deal and agents are super mad about
it. There's not going to be any resolution there, right? They're just going to kind of have to get used to it.
I think it's one of those, don't like it, you're free to go somewhere else. So that's due to start on January 1st. And that was just announced on the quarterly earnings call.
Okay, so that's what's going on. Is Allstate having trouble for any specific reason?
You know, it's unclear, and I'm gonna talk a little bit more with Steve Daniels later this week about that, because I have that question too.
Right.
I want kind of the bigger context of the insurance agency. Why is it shifting? Why are they trimming costs?
Another reason to listen to The Daily Gist. Amy Guth, thanks for coming by.
Thanks so much.